Have you ever heard a musical artist described as having great chops? What does that mean? Well, the term chops is slang in the music business that refers to an artist that has developed great skills over time, whether they are a musician, composer, producer, or other titles associated with the music business. This is Scott Grimaldi, your host of Got Chops. Join me as I interview one musical artist per episode that I've had the pleasure of either performing, recording, or work with in my career. Plus, I'll be interviewing artists I've always wanted to speak with. We'll discover how each artist developed their chops, listen to their stories, and much more. This is Got Chops. My special guest artist for today is the lead vocalist and guitarist for a New Hampshire band that specializes in New Orleans jazz. That's the band playing behind me on the composition Carmona AD from their album Smoke, recorded in 2018. Native to New England, this band has quickly become an institution spreading the good news of New Orleans music across the Northeast and beyond, playing at various venues that include concert halls, street corners, music festivals, bars, and libraries. This seven-piece group formed on Fat Tuesday in 2012 at a local club gig and just celebrated their 11th anniversary. In addition to their four albums and one EP, this band has quite a fan base, a busy touring schedule, plus a weekly residency every Tuesday night at the Press Room in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. This New Orleans-style jazz band from New Hampshire certainly got chops. Please welcome Stu Diaz, the lead vocalist and guitarist from the Soggy Po' Boys. Good morning, Stu. This is Scott from Got Chops, the podcast.
Hey, Scott.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Thank you so much for granting me this time. I'm looking so forward to our conversation and finding out about you and your group. So for my listeners at home, on the phone from New Hampshire is the lead vocalist and guitarist for a band, a music group from New Hampshire, and they are called the Soggy Po' Boys. They specialize in the music of New Orleans jazz. So this is going to be really great for me, and I'm sure Stu is going to enlighten and teach every one of my listeners. And the way I found out about your group, Stu, is obviously on Instagram, I guess, where everyone finds out about, you know, things that are out there or new or existing. And then that led me to your different platforms and your music and your videos. And I really love what you and your bandmates do. As a member of a band that specializes in New Orleans jazz, what does the music slang Got Chops mean to you?
I guess I would say it means something different than it would mean in the conventional jazz sense, because so much of the chops, I guess, as I would define it in the context of what we play, is centered around listening. And I think that's something that maybe gets forgotten a little bit, that having chops can mean hearing chops as well as playing chops, because so much about what we play is about listening to each other and interacting with each other to create something interesting in a live setting, that that's where we're exercising most of our chops.
That's a great answer. And you guys are specializing in you know, a specific jazz from New Orleans, and that's a bygone era that is still being performed today. And we'll talk about the various artists that are still there, including you guys. So back when it first came on the scene, there was no written music. And as you said, the musicians in the band had to listen. Or if you snuck behind a bar where the band is playing, and if you didn't have a radio back then, or if you didn't have a phonograph, you would have to memorize what the band's doing. You would run home and try to duplicate that on the piano or whatever.
Right. I mean, I think another thing that's worth noting that maybe gets forgotten is that that era of jazz is the last time that jazz music and pop music were the same thing. Meaning that era of jazz wasn't geared to an audience that was already predisposed to it. It was geared towards a more sort of conventional listening audience. Just anyone on the street could get into it, because it was not, this might sound like a dig, but I don't mean for it to be the case. Jazz, as time has gone on and as it has evolved, has taken on this character of being somewhat esoteric. And I think New Orleans music tends to be the least esoteric of the grouping.
Do you and your bandmates use that term in conversation, gotchops?
No, not really. I guess the reason that we don't is, I think gotchops, I think it sort of, the connotation, I think, I did not go to music school. I need to be candid about that, but a lot of the guys in the band did. And I think that phrase has a connotation of maybe an element of competition that us in the band don't really see, meaning we think of it as, hey, everyone can participate in this thing. And as I said, you know, in my answer to the first question, chops can mean very, very different thing. So a trombone player playing trailing slide lines artfully and tastefully can be as impressive, and those chops can be every bit as valid as a trombone player who's playing, you know, 16th and 32nd notes, you know?
I agree. Absolutely. Good answer. So Fat Tuesday was yesterday. That was February 21st. And from your website, I see that you had a gig at the Press Room in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Share with my listeners what Fat Tuesday is and its association with the celebration of Mardi Gras and New Orleans, because it did hail from New Orleans.
So here's a little sort of added point, I would say, Scott. We didn't actually have a gig at the Press Room last night. Our residency was on hiatus for January and February. We're back in March. We did have a gig yesterday, but I will still answer your question re Mardi Gras. Back on the map here. So something that I think maybe your listeners don't know especially well is New Orleans is a very strange place. There aren't counties there. There are parishes there. A lot of the geographical divisions there are based on the church. And because of that, there is an element of religion that kind of runs through a lot of the governing principles of Louisiana. And another thing that's really important to note is there is an intense fatalism that runs through that city, because from the moment it was settled, it was a dangerous place. There were hurricanes, there was yellow fever, there was malaria, there was high crime. And so there's this very, very fatalistic attitude that kind of runs through the city. And Mardi Gras, as I imagine some of your listeners know, is the Tuesday right before Ash Wednesday, which is the beginning of Lent. And so there's this very much, a sentiment of, okay, well, we got to be good for 40 days. Let's really get all of our partying out right now. And so it's this big, vivacious celebration with, you know, loud parades and rich food, just sort of in anticipation of the somberness of Lent that's about to come.
And if you can describe a little bit for my young listeners that maybe have never heard of this or seen this, it's probably one of the only places that we know of that when there's a funeral, it's conducted as a celebration, and you have a street band, a second line band, that will escort them down the street. And if you see this for the first time, it's kind of jarring, but you get it immediately. Oh, yes, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, so the concept of death in New Orleans, the attitude towards it, I guess I would say, is different. Not because they don't believe in it, but because, you know, as I said before, it's such a table stakes part of life, you know, because at any point when you were living there, you could die for any reason. There is this celebration of, okay, that person's with God now. So on the way to the funeral, you know, the family's carrying the casket, and there's a band playing somewhat somber music. And then once the burial has happened, on the walk back to the house, the band plays much more lively sort of celebratory music, and people on the street are sort of encouraged to become part of it and join the little parade. And the people who, you know, aren't part of the main family and band who join it are known as second liners, because they formed the second line, you know, in addition to the people who are active participants in the funeral.
You talked about it's a tough place to live. They've had, New Orleans has had a lot of destruction over the years, and yet the people, you know, they build it up. They love to live there. If something happens again, they rebuild it. I remember watching with my wife the HBO special Tremé from a number of years ago, and the devastation that they went through. And because of that, and we always wanted to go to New Orleans, but we went there specifically for that. And we visited that area, and it was amazing. We went into this one jazz club. You probably know the name of it. I forgot it right now. But I mean, it practically had no foundation. They had all the barbecue pits on the outside, people with not two nickels to rub together, but they're happy as heck. Wow.
Yeah, I think the people of New Orleans, sad as it is, have sort of become accustomed to every, you know, so many years there being a massive event that changes the day-to-day workings of their lives. And I think built into their spirit is adaptability. I also think that, you know, a major part of the way that they look at life is, I have agency over the things that I can control, and I will try and control those. And the things that I cannot and are gigantic and difficult to address, I'm going to put that on the back burner until I have something that helps me control that.
Soggy Po' Boys is based out of New Hampshire. I find that fascinating because when you think of New Orleans jazz, well, you got to go to New Orleans. But again, because of the internet and how we learn music, especially by ear for something that's very specialized like that, it doesn't matter really where you live. Were all the band members originally born there in New Hampshire?
I think most of us were. I certainly was not, but I think most of us were. I think the way we came to this music was pretty different. You know, all of us were in kind of different places, but once we got together to attempt it, and, you know, it didn't go perfectly well, but we could see the ways in which it could get better almost immediately, and all of us started investing in that. We started to have a lot of fun, and we realized that there is a type of communication that you maybe take for granted when you're on the bandstand and interacting with people without ever saying a word to them. That's a type of socialization that some of us require, you know, in the way that extroverts require other people around them, you know, speaking and such and interacting to gain energy, and introverts require silence. This is this weird sort of middle thing where a lot of us in the band require this unspoken musical interaction to drive us. And I think that's what like really got us interested in how do we develop this? How do we make this richer? How do we make sure that we're doing this the right way? Because, you know, the music is very, very popular. And a thing that we're particularly sensitive about is sometimes the presentation of it can seem like a caricature, you know, people wearing straw hats and suspenders and stuff that are almost play acting this music, and music is an afterthought. And for us, music is the thing, the tradition is the thing. And so we like feel very strongly about preserving that tradition. And, you know, that's true. We don't live in New Orleans, but I don't think you need to I don't think you need to live in a place to love a thing, right? Because if that was the case, gypsy jazz would only be played in France.
Right, exactly. But I mean, to the average person, like, wait, oh, you guys are from New Orleans? If they see you in New Hampshire and you say, no, we're from here, I was like, what? Mm-hmm. So, so you're educating people also. So I'm assuming that you and your bandmates came up with part of the name of your group after the New Orleans sandwich, Po' Boy. So explain what a po' boy is and if that is exactly part of the reason why your band is named what it is.
So, yeah, so a po' boy is a New Orleans sandwich that has French bread. The key elements of it are French bread, and then the optional is dressed or not dressed, and that means with lettuce, tomato, mayo, and the ingredients, the central ingredient can be all sorts of different things. It can be fried shrimp, fried oysters, catfish. My personal favorite is hot sausage. But there's all manner of different ways that you can have a po' boy. They're fantastic. To be totally candid with you, we named the group when we didn't think we would have a second gig. You know, we got together initially for a pickup gig on Mardi Gras Day. So yesterday was actually our 11th year anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary. That's excellent. Wow.
So we got together for a gig on Mardi Gras Day, and, you know, it was just a pickup gig. It was just at a bar. And so, you know, we needed to just come up with a name to bill for the evening. And without having, you know, we didn't think we'd ever play again in that configuration. We just thought it'd be a fun thing. So we came up with a sort of silly name. And then as we continued to play together, we realized, oh no, now this is our name, because people are looking out for it and showing up. So that's kind of how the name stuck.
That's really fantastic. And it creates a great storyline, you know, something to talk about with people.
Yeah.
So who started the group?
So the initial group that one night in over 11 years ago, my goodness, of the band that was there, it was a very different band, even sound wise. The configuration was B3 organ, drums, electric guitar, saxophone, and trumpet. And of that membership, the B3 organ player plays piano. He's still in the band. The saxophone player still plays saxophone, and he's still in the band. And the electric guitar player is now an acoustic guitar player, and that is me, and I'm still in the band. And the rest of the configuration is all new.
So is there a designated leader?
No, it's actually, we function pretty democratically. And you know, that has pros and cons, surely, but I don't think we would have it any other way.
So what was the inspiration for forming a New Orleans style band after you had a couple of different, starts? Cause you're the way you started is not the way you ended up.
Right. So it was a Mardi Gras gig that we started at, and essentially it was formed by mistake because we thought that we were contracted to play till 11. And so, you know, we finished up, we packed up the B3, which is, as you know, is a very, very heavy and cumbersome instrument to move.
That's right.
packed up the drums, and we're getting ready to go. And the owner of the club said, whoa, 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 hold on. You're supposed to play to 1. And we looked at each other. And we all kind of said, okay, we're not moving that B3 back in here. And but there was a piano in the venue. So Mike Effenberger, a piano player, sat at the piano, and we kind of sat around the piano Jim, our drummer at the time, just brought his snare out and some brushes. And, you know, for what we had been playing that night was sort of electric funk, like Meters, Wild Chapatulas, that sort of stuff. We started playing more sort of swing standards, and something kind of clicked. You know, the audience responded to it, and we did too. It just felt like a very natural progression of what we were trying to do, and it just felt a little bit more intimate, because rather than going by a prescribed arrangement, which is, you know, whatever, 8 bars of A, 8 bars of B, we were actually having to listen to each other to make sure that we all knew who was leading and where we were going. And we had a lot of fun. And that's sort of the main impetus for how things changed. And from, you know, sort of that moment forward, we became a New Orleans music band. And, you know, I know a lot of, certainly your listeners would probably expect us to call ourselves New Orleans Jazz. And I think we've resisted that term a little bit, not because we don't play it or we have anything against it, but because we're focused broadly on the music of New Orleans. So, you know, sometimes that is jazz for sure. Sometimes that's soul. That's gospel. We play a lot of Beguines and music from Martinique, because a lot of New Orleans music was influenced by music from that area. So we play a wide range of stuff, but we certainly don't do just the funk thing anymore, which was what we were contracted to do for our very first gig.
And that's funny because, and I'm sure you know about this, if you listen to the music of Trombone Shorty, he now infuses funk into, you know, this new New Orleans sound, and you're getting rid of the funk to go traditional.
I wouldn't say that we're getting rid of it. I think we've just sort of avoided the catch-all term jazz, because in a sense it's loaded, and that isn't the part of it that I think we're resisting. It just feels like, for the range of things that we do, a little bit reductive, because jazz certainly doesn't encapsulate immediately in someone's mind a calypso or, you know, John the Revelator or something like that. And I think it's more sort of to make clear to a listenership that what we do is it's much more New Orleans focused than it is jazz focused.
Have all or some of the members of Soggy Po' Boys visited New Orleans and experienced the authentic music and food, which is amazing?
Every single one of us, yep.
Excellent.
Every single one of us, yep. some of us more than others, but every single one of us has been and had the experience.
So was that before the formation of the group or after? And if it was after, was it then, okay, I think we should also try this type of music that we just witnessed?
So some of us had been before a couple of times, but we did sort of make a group trip after, where, you know, that was sort of the, okay, we're going into this. We need to learn how to do it right. We don't want to just seem like some charlatans who thought it was cool to sort of, you know, go after something that seems to be trending, seems to be niche. We wanted to make sure that we did it right. So we kind of made a group trip down there. And, you know, for the duration of that trip, we caught as much music as we could. And we're really sort of sponges, you know, trying to grab a hold of the conventions of the genre. Like, what does good group playing look like? What does bad group playing look like? When is it time to lay out? When is it time to be very active? What does it mean to actually have a dynamic shift up or down? You know, is loudness that? Or is it complexity of rhythm? And so those are all of the things that we wanted to really wrap our heads around to make sure that we were doing it correctly.
That's great. So speaking about New Orleans music, how would you describe the differences between the traditional New Orleans music played by, let's say, the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and today's New Orleans music played by, who I just mentioned, Trombone Shorty?
Well, I think the New Orleans music scene is very sort of heterogeneous broadly. You know, Trombone Shorty, Troy Andrews, like, his family is in New Orleans royalty.
That's right.
You know, if you look through the family tree, they play everyone. I think the key difference comes in the title of the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. They're preservationists. I think they, although here's where, I'm going to back up for a second. I guess I would, a little bit push back on the notion that Preservation Hall is playing purely traditional jazz, because especially if you look at their last couple of records, they've stretched quite a bit. And on the last couple of records, I think there were two of them that they did absolutely no jazz on, which I think is kind of interesting. I do think that within New Orleans, there are a couple of different scenes, and there are some groups who are certainly dedicated to preserving jazz in the way that it was, from, let's say, 1915 through like, or like 1890 through like 1925. But then there are groups of players there who are sort of progressive, saying, okay, well, we've moved forward, and the ideas and the ethos of this music is awesome, but I think it's okay to revise some of the elements, almost like an elements of style thing when it comes to writing, right? And there are other groups that are just sort of, hey, you know, we're done with the tradition. We want to play music that's jazz adjacent, but the culture that we came up in is much more of a street beat culture. It's much more of a playing experience that doesn't have chording instruments. And so we want to sculpt our new sound around that. So there's a great degree of heterogeneity in how New Orleans music is thought of, even within New Orleans.
You mentioned that a few, or maybe more than a few, of your bandmates went to music school, have degrees in music. And when they did, they either went to a jazz school like Berklee College of Music in Boston or a conservatory. So when you all started to discover this type of, you know, specific type of jazz or the flavor of New Orleans, did they adapt to it right away? Did they like it? Because they certainly have the skills from their background and their basic training. But did they get a different sense of appreciation after going to New Orleans?
You know, I would say there's varying degrees of that. You know, for some of us, it felt very innate. I can speak for myself, and that to me it felt very innate. And I didn't go to school for music, but there's an element of New Orleans music that is very visceral and very much reactive to what an audience is doing. And in those situations, I think as someone who kind of feeds off of that intuitively, it made a lot of sense for me. But, you know, for some of us, and all of us have sort of come around to this now, I will say that to begin with. But for some of us who were more from this sort of, bebop school or, you know, like conservatory school side of things, the notion to follow the roadmap, I think, was a little bit at odds with the way that New Orleans music works. But I think all of us have spent enough time now studying the tradition and trying to be familiar with it and really understanding the conventions of the genre to make sure that we are, you know, appropriate stewards of it.
And that's great that you and your bandmates were all very dedicated to trying to perfect this and having open ears and open minds to do this. And that makes your gigs exciting and interesting. And the people in the audience, they feed off of that. I think that's wonderful.
I think that is the case. And I mean, it certainly has been great for us, but I think more importantly, the learning part of it for us is being able to accept and acknowledge when a thing isn't working and a thing doesn't fit. And we're trying to, you know, impose an idea that doesn't fit naturally into the scaffold that we've built. I think that's where a lot of the growth comes from, like understanding, you know, when to kill your own ego in service of the music.
Wonderful. That is the true meaning of a band. You know, it's a democracy, all of us together for, you know, a certain common goal. And you guys are going to be together for a long time, I can tell. So speaking about your band, share with my listeners who the members of your band are, what they play and or sing, or are you the only vocalist?
I will go into that right now. So we have, we're a seven-piece. My name is Stu Diaz. I play guitar and I sing. I'm the lead vocalist. I sing lead vocals on most things, but almost everyone in the band sings backup vocals, and New Orleans music requires a lot of chanting and shouting sometimes, you know, so we need people to join in. On clarinet and soprano sax, we have Eric Claxton, incredibly gifted musician. I don't think we could do half of the Sidney Bechet stuff that we do if it wasn't for him. He's just very, very gifted and very goal-oriented in that he focuses on that type of music, on that technique, to make sure that he can really nail it and make it sound effortless. On tenor sax, we have Nick Manella, incredible educator. He's really, really got incredible time and a good sense of what makes a good arrangement. On trombone, one of our newest members, his name is Josh Gagnon. He is such a musical guy, incredible trailing player. And when he plays lead, my goodness, he has the energy of a trumpet and can really push an audience. On bass, we have Scott Kiefner, also relatively recent addition to the band, incredible bass player, incredibly adaptive. On drums, we have Brian Waterhouse, the very newest member of the band. I should note, our previous trumpet player and drummer, they both now live in New Orleans and are active gigging musicians down there.
Wow, that's excellent.
So when our former drummer left, Brian joined the band, and he's been doing an incredible job. And our piano player, with Nick Manella, our tenor player, and myself, our piano player, Mike Effenberger, is the three of us are the original members of the band, and he is this just musical cerebral genius. He understands music on a level that I know most of us never will. He understands it as though if music were a programming language, he understands the binary of it. You know, he just is that level of genius when it comes to this music.
That's beautiful. And I'm sure he's 1,000% into it, like all of you guys. And it sounds like you feed off of each other.
Absolutely. You know, it's we have I would describe our relationship as sort of like a family relationship where, you know, you love each other and it's almost unconditional. And because of that, you feel free to annoy each other at any open opportunity.
I would like you to pick two different musical selections that your group has recorded that you feel best represents what your band does, so I could filter them into this interview as you speak about them now. And are they original compositions or covers?
So the first one I'll talk about is a song called It Ain't My Fault. This is a hybrid in the sense that the music for this is written by Smokey Johnson, but the lyrics for it and the arrangement of it are original. So the lyrics were originally written by myself. The arrangement was done by us as a band, and we released that on our album All in Favor. And the part of the reason that we thought this highlighted our band is it has a lot of elements that I think I feel like we're good at. It's got some great group playing. It's got some great call and response vocals. The rhythm section is absolutely locked in with this relatively minimalist groove, and instruments kind of go in and out, and it goes dynamically up, it goes dynamically down. It has a lot to sink your teeth into as a listener. If you're a sort of audiophile, it's very much a choose your adventure song, meaning you could hone in on one instrument and just listen to that for the duration of the song and have a separate experience than if you honed in on another one. So I thought that was a good sort of representation of us.
But I'm sick of sitting here by myself. I got these brand new $16 shoes. Gonna take for a spin, so spread the news. Now I don't know if you're up to the test, but I figured the least I could do was ask. So if you I'm finding is the lonely blues. I've been trying to get these ones and twos, and there's one of me and one of you. Oh Lord, it ain't my fault.
The other song is an original. It's called So Simple, and the music for it was written by Eric Claxton, our clarinet and soprano sax player. The lyrics for it were written by myself, and we arranged it as a group. And the song is broadly about relationships and how some of the things that make them beautiful, some of the things that really characterize them, are the strife more than the parts that are easy and beautiful. The strife, I think, strengthens relationships in the way that lifting weights, though it hurts, strengthens a muscle.
So, do you have any upcoming live performances or projects that you'd like to announce?
We have several live performances. What I would direct your listeners to is to find us online at soggypoboys.com. We have some tentative plans to make a new record at some point in the future, maybe end of this year, maybe early next year. Our residency will be at the Press Room in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Will be resuming in March, and we'll be there every Tuesday. And I guess the biggest, most fun thing that we're doing this summer, we have a really active schedule, but we'll be playing the Green River Festival in Western Massachusetts, and that has a bunch of really fantastic acts playing it, like the Wood Brothers, a bunch of other kind of big name acts, but we're very excited to be doing that.
Great. And where else can my listeners find you on social media?
So you can find us at Soggy Po'Boys on Instagram, on Facebook. Our music's on Spotify and Apple Music. And we just put out a new record late last year called It's Good to Laugh Again. And that, in addition to all of our other records, will be on those.
Stu, thank you so much for granting me this time to interview. I've learned so much about you and your group. It's fascinating. And I love to hear from people that are just so passionate about music and what they do and getting together. And it sounds like you guys, like we said before, were all meant to be. And great things are in store for you for the future. I will keep listening to you and following you. And when I'm up that way, hopefully I can drop in somewhere where you're playing locally.
Absolutely. And, you know, thank you so much, Scott, for taking the time to talk and to sort of let us muse about, you know, where the value in this music is to us. Really appreciate that.
My pleasure. Okay, Stu, have a great day. I hope to speak to you real soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Scott.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining me on today's show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and could hear why my guest got chops. You can follow my podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or Anchor.fm, and stay connected between episodes on Instagram at GotChopsPodcast. Join me on the next episode when we discover why my next guest got chops.